Here we are in lesson 78. Now we're looking at the next piece of evidence. We've already talked about embryology. We've talked about human DNA. Now we're moving into our third evidence that's in our high school textbooks that points to the fact that evolution is true because our organs descended from primitive ones by unguided incremental changes over time. And the example they give in the science textbooks in our high schools that our students are studying is the vertebrate eye. So let's go to the next slide and take a look at what the high school textbooks tell us. Here, right out of the textbooks, here's what it says, and I quote, "Evidence today supports the hypothesis that all complex eyes evolved from a simple ancestral patch of photoreceptor cells through a series of incremental modifications that benefited the owners at each stage. The figure below illustrates the range of complexity in the structure of eyes among mollusks today. Two important things to mention. I capitalized them and underlined them. Again, we're talking about small incremental changes that somehow took simplistic eyes to a high level of complexity over great periods of time, and that these changes that they're claiming are all structural. They're in the bones, in the structure that we can see, not in the biochemistry that we've already studied. So let's click on the screen and walk through it. First, we look at the early stages in mollusks, which have very simple eyes. There's a photoreceptor layer where you have 11 CTS retinals present in the bottom nerve fibers. You go then to the next layer, where we're moving up now, where some mollusks have eye cups that have no lenses or other means of focusing, but it's a little more complicated. You look at then the next step, the number three. Now we're into the octopus eye and a marine snail, where you see more complex eyes. And here's what the textbook says. In those mollusks that do have complex eyes, the organs probably evolved in small stages of adaptation. Now, I don't know if you remember, but when we were looking at intelligent design and we were talking about irreducibly complex systems, we had defined an irreducibly complex system back in lesson 54 in your book, which was argument four for God's existence. You can go back and look at this at lesson 54. Here's the definition. An irreducible complex system is a single system which is composed of several interacting parts that contribute to the function, like we have here with the eye being able to see, and where removing any one of the parts would cause the system to stop functioning. And we talked about the difference between an organized system where all the parts had to be there at the same time or it couldn't function, to an aggregate system where parts could be built up gradually by numerous incremental changes or modifications. So in the box there, in bold text, it says, "Do you think Darwin was as sure that the eye formed as an aggregate as apparently our high school textbooks are?" Well, let's read his quote. "The eye to this day gives me a cold shudder. To suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus at different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural selection seems, I frankly freely admit, absurd in the highest possible degree." He doubted it. He wouldn't even agree with what our textbooks are teaching our children. Let's go to slide three then and look at what we've been teaching in creation. Remember this? When we were looking at the eye, this is back now. If you go back and you look in lesson 56, we went through the biochemistry of vision. And here it is again. We said the eye is intelligently designed because of what happens within the proteins when a photon of light hits one of the proteins, 11 CTS retinal. Remember we said that until a photon hits, 11 CTS retinal is attached to rhodopsin. Well, go ahead and click on your screen. What happens is when that photon hits it, that combination of 11 CTS retinal and rhodopsin turns into that macromolecule, macroprotein, metarhodopsin 2, and you have all those changes happening. Transducin suddenly drops off GDP and combines to metarhodopsin 2. And when it does that, what happens? Phosphodiesterase comes over and grabs it. Then you have GDP. When all those combine, then you have the reaction of cGMP levels dropping. When cGMP levels drop, what happens? The sodium ion chamber, another protein, drops in its concentration. Guess what happens when that happens? It creates an electric current across the retinal cells, which then sends a current through the optic nerve, and you see. Does that sound like natural selection? Darwin wasn't even aware of this intense biochemical reactions, this transfer function in the eye. So the structures that they're teaching you in the textbooks, those are just structures. You know, a unique eye can be designed by God for a unique species or a unique organism. There's no reason to think, it's perfectly reasonable to think, that the eyes were designed that way for each organism, just like the different years of a Chevrolet Corvette change year by year. Nobody thinks the Corvette's evolving. There's no incremental changes in Corvettes. The engineers have a different design each year. Well, why can't God just design the eyes differently for a nautilus or for an octopus or for a snail? When you look at what leads you to think that that makes total sense is when you look at this biochemical background that nobody knew, Darwin certainly didn't know, that's going on in your eye. And remember, Psalm 94:9 says, "He who planted the eye, hear he planted the ear, shall he not hear? And he who formed the eye, shall he not see?" God takes complete credit for making our eyes, for being the creator. That is lesson 78, another refutation of the third evidence in our textbooks that the eye evolved.